Sports, wine, life. This is the Macko and Cos podcast.
Hey everyone, and welcome to the Macko and Cos podcast. I'm Matt Cos. That's Bob Macko. It's a reminder. Podcast is brought to you by Jeff Pollock. If you need legal help, use our sponsor. He's not just our sponsor. He's our lawyer. And more importantly, he is our friend, Jeff Pollock. Jeff with a G. Bob, how are you doing?
I'm good, Matt. When we do this over Zoom, as we're doing today, I want to play a game with you.
Yeah.
We can tabulate the score over time if you'd like. Let me explain what the game is. And I think the name of it will give you the rules.
Okay.
Pants or no pants?
I have shorts.
No. You have to guess me.
Oh, you. Oh, no pants. No pants at all.
Okay. I'm just going to stand up here.
All right. That's it. All right. Now move back. Yep. Oh, there it is. Well, those are pajama pants with hearts on it. Those aren't real pants, Bob. No self-respecting man wears those out of his home.
And yet I do.
Boy,
I bet. There's a shot of me and Cece shopping, and we're both wearing our pajamas. This was taken 2 weeks ago.
Sandra's not concerned that when you leave the home, you're going to be swooped up by some young lady on Queen West when you're wearing those.
I will sum up our relationship vis-a-vis those kinds of things with an anecdote, Matthew. Mm-hmm. I was losing weight and starting to feel good. And I said to her, cocky and joking, of course, what are you going to do when I'm handsome and good looking again? And she said, without a pause, I have time to think about it.
Oh, it's so good. The best part is there, Bob, I was excited that one pause for what Sandra was going to say and didn't disappoint at all. Bravo. No notes.
Yeah, that was a pretty good one. So we had to do a reboot on the pod today because you sent a link and it didn't have sound. And this is always amazing to me because in every venue of life, you are the most go with the flow person I've ever met, except for technology.
Yeah.
Technology, for whatever reason, you feel like, I don't know, you become more like me, or you feel like there's something that you need to solve.
What it is, Bob, is fear. It's my own ignorance. So what happened was I had just done Zoom for live TV with CP24 talking about the Raptors. Everything was fine. Immediately got off, immediately sent you a Zoom link, and my computer was saying my speaker wasn't working. I didn't do anything different. We tried to connect. It didn't work. So I said, okay, let's do the thing where you take the Nintendo game cartridge out, you blow on it, you put it in, and it works. So that's what we did. We closed everything down. I turned my computer off. I counted to three. I turned it on, and the speaker was working. It's not a problem. And my problem is, why is that the solution? I want to know what I did wrong so I won't do it wrong again, because everything when it comes to technology or doing these podcasts, it's on a thin layer of ice, like Christopher Walken in The Dead Zone, because neither one of us is that smart. It doesn't take much for the ice to break and all the children fall in the water, which in this equivalent is we can't record shit. So I have a high level of insecurity when the technology isn't working.
This must be what you feel like when you see me get all wound up. It's kind of funny.
I hate it. It annoys me because I want a solution. I don't mind being dumb. I recognize my limitations. What bothers me is when there isn't a logical explanation beyond, just turn it on and off. That's unsatisfying.
I don't know what it is about tech, but I become you, whereas I just let it go. I'm a leaf in the river. I think to myself, if turning it off and back on again doesn't fix it, it can't be fixed.
But that don't you feel helpless? Like, isn't there, you just control F, B, and then a menu picks up and you hit a button and bada bing, bada bang, it's working, you know?
I feel helpless when it comes to things like, why must we suffer? Why do humans treat each other so bad? What is art? Who is God? And How do I ask him some questions? Like, all of these things drive me crazy. But the Zoom link, what are you going to do?
It's the right way to do it, but then I'd spend the whole day trying to figure out how are we going to deliver our audio goal to the earballs of people.
I love that that's your goal. But, it's not like I'm not going to torture myself as soon as this pod's over. Like, I've already got an essay queued up in my inbox about, German romanticism and its resonances in early Platonic thinking. Nobody needs to know that, but I do.
What would be your first question to God?
Why is the toaster so imperfect?
It hasn't changed. If we went back in time to 1955, we would laugh at the technology of a television or a radio or a car or medicine. But the toaster would basically give us toast at the exact same rate and speed as it does now.
I feel like the toaster is needlessly finicky. You kind of have to guess what the perfect setting is for your toast.
Oh, yeah.
Considering that I can like DNA splice with AI right now, I don't know why I have to guess at getting the right brownness on toast.
And if you're at an Airbnb, you're like, forget it. Like, you have
That's
no
what I mean.
idea
Like,
what's
I
going to
know
happen.
my toaster,
Yeah.
right? I know
Yeah.
my toaster,
Yeah.
but toasters in general, there just seems to be no particular rhyme or reason to how they work.
None at all. None.
So I'd ask that, then probably how to fix the Middle East.
Right, that's a good second one. And then God would ask, "Really? You're wearing those pants? It's the heavenly gates. You're in heaven. I'm God, and you got your pajama pants on that you used to go get some produce."
As he said to Moses on Mount Sinai, put thy shoes off thy feet. And then for me, he'd add, and think about the pajamas too.
So where do you want to
All right, I
start
got
this?
some questions. Yeah, I want to start with Toronto solipsism and
Okay.
how I'm watching the first round of the NHL playoffs with the Leafs in mind. Do you have any series that you're particularly invested in emotionally?
Well, if it's emotionally and related to the Maple Leafs, it's not Vegas and Utah. It's Minnesota and Dallas because Minnesota has lost in the first round of the playoffs like 9 straight years. Full Principal Rooney, 9 times, 9 times, 9 times. So it's like, see, Minnesota's like small market Toronto, never able to get out of that first round.
I'm going to take that one step further because I'm watching that one carefully too. So if Minnesota loses that and you're trying to make a case to Quinn Hughes that you should stick around because this is a winning organization, you might want to shake things up. You're not going to do anything with Kaprizov because he's a top 10 player and you're trying to add to that. You're not trying to subtract. But who would you add if you were Minnesota from the Leafs? You'd want to add Austin Matthews or you'd want to add William Nylander. Maybe Matthew Nyes. Maybe. The point sort of being, if there were to be a calamity with Matthews this offseason, Minnesota then becomes a potential trading partner because they would have their own calamity to deal with. Now we can talk. See, this is what I mean by my emotional investment. I'm like
Right.
scouting failures to see do we have matching failures with any other organization out there? For example, if Dallas loses, well, they got a Jason Robertson thing. I mean, they don't want to pay him the money. He's probably going to be worth around 12 million bucks. We got a Robertson. Maybe we unite the brothers.
You mean trade for, oh, I thought you wanted to do a switcheroo. They take Nick, we take Jason. And by the way, I would make that deal as a Leaf fan.
I would make that one too. That's kind of like we'll give you Alec Baldwin and we'll take Stephen Baldwin.
We'll take another one. We'll take a Stephen and a Baldwin to be named later, whichever one you want.
There's got to be more somewhere.
Oh, yeah,
We'll
there's
take
tons of them.
Alec and his wife. So that way, that's like taking on a heavy cap hit.
Sure. Yeah, no, that's I'm all good with that.
If Edmonton loses, they won last night. So, I kind of feel like they're going to come back against Anaheim because the stakes are too big. But obviously, that's just all about Connor. How pissed off he's going to be and how fucked they are as an organization. And I don't know that he'd want to come to the Leafs. But if he's got to go somewhere, maybe here. You see what I'm saying? This is the what's this got to do with the Leafs or session of the first round.
And then also, what if the Penguins win tonight, tie it, and then they heroically win in game seven, and then Kyle Dubas, who's, even though he's in a retool, is helping the Penguins get to the next round of the playoffs. There's a emotional minefields all over the place in the first round of the playoffs.
So you're still thinking about the relationships. I'm thinking strictly transactionally, Matt. Okay. You know what I mean? I'm the arch capitalist. I'm only thinking about like asset and asset management. That's like if Montreal loses to Tampa Bay, maybe they want to revisit that Matthew Nyes deal that was rumored to, you know, be around the trade deadline. Tampa Bay, I don't want to deal with them. I'm just sick of them. I can't even look at them anymore. They make me the whole state of Florida. I know you've got your place in Naples, and I'm sure it's great. But I would take a saw, like in those old Looney Tunes cartoons, just saw it off and let it float off like an island.
We would lose so much good crispy fish sandwiches and so much shrimp, Bob. Think about the crustaceans.
Louisiana has shrimp. California has more than enough sandwiches.
Yeah, that's fine. All right.
You know, it's interesting. If Montreal loses, it'll be because probably their best line didn't score 5-on-5, which means they'd want an infusion of offense. And maybe you're willing to shake loose a couple really great young prospects. Maybe. We'll see. You mentioned Utah. This one to me is really interesting. Because if Utah loses, I don't think people will be disappointed. They're a young team. It's their first playoff. It's exciting. But they have an aggressive owner in Ryan Smith. And we have an American superstar. And they have a ton of young prospects. The kind that you could rebuild an organization around. TJ Ginla, Cole Beaudoin, Caleb Denoyer. Sorry, it's a lot of French.
You've done your research. You've definitely done your research to be able to name Utah mammoth prospects. That is,
well, TJ Ginla is a pretty well-known one because of his dad.
Yeah, no. That one is.
Denoyer was a top pick, a year or two ago. So, you know, yes, I did do my research because I thought, well, who else do they have? And I created a little list. Mm-hmm. You would never get the same value for Matthews player to player, but they got stuff. They got stuff. It could be a Willie Nylander thing. Anyway, my point being, if they lose and then now they've got the taste of it on their lips, they might want to take an aggressive step forward.
This goes in a direction, Bob, in something that's a theme of mine on and off throughout the year. And it's I'm going to be working this up into some big opening thoughts. Are we going to get to a point where if you're a general manager of one of the Canadian teams and you're picking high in the first round and the two guys you're thinking, one is from America and one is from somewhere else, do you take the somewhere else because there really is a narrative of Americans not wanting to play in Canada? They want to be anonymous. They have no interest in growing the game. They have more interest in flip-flops and two media members after a game. And one of the media members is on the payroll of the team's website. You always hear about the American player in Canada only wanting to play in the States. You never hear about the star player saying, I only want to be in Canada. And people can say, John Tavares. I'm like, awesome. Give me the other examples. I'll put on a pot of coffee.
I think you're really onto something. I've been thinking about this too, particularly with Brady Tkachuk. There's a lot of talk about, is he going to stick around in Ottawa? Matthew Tkachuk was in Calgary. Now he's in Florida. Johnny Hockey, rest in peace, made the move from Canada to the States. It feels like there is something there, but it's clearly exacerbated by the political tensions between the two countries. And I think back to just after the Americans won the gold medal, and there was the discussion about going to the White House. And I tweeted out, if Austin Matthews goes to the State of the Union, don't come back. Just have someone send for your things, because I could never cheer for him if he stood next to Trump and celebrated and made that goof look good in honor of a country that's doing so many bad things, it's even impossible to count. Point sort of being, the politics might just make this dynamic you're discussing even worse.
Yeah,
it's got a bit of an Ovechkin thing, because I can't cheer for Ovechkin now that he's pro-Putin.
Well, he's not been pro Putin.
No, I was going to say not now that he's pro Putin, but you know, as the war in Ukraine extends into, you know, into its fourth year, and you know, maybe 10 years ago you didn't love that he was supporting Putin, but now that Putin's like full on war crimes, and you know, this is his golf buddy, like I can't cheer for that. So if Brady Tkachuk wants to go out there and play beer pong, call back to last episode, with Donald Trump, I can't cheer for that either.
By the way, I think, yeah, I think the political thing is certainly part of it because of all the conversations that, you know, Brady Tkachuk was being asked about, you know, any American player won gold is on a Canadian team. That became a day and a half of conversation. I think you might be giving a lot of these players too much credit. I think they care more about golf, less taxes, and not having to be a star, which is a hockey thing.
Pushback there. It's not the players that I'm giving credit to. It's the fans in Canada that we're not going to want to cheer for that.
Okay.
They may not care, but we do.
It seems like it's just another hurdle, you know, when it comes to this. Oh, a guy's a free agent. Well, you know, he's going to want to leave the Canadian market, which is kind of why, Bob, I think we all need to root for the Montreal Canadiens to win a Stanley Cup. Because if they win a Stanley Cup and all the American players who are afraid of microphones and cameras, if they see the level of love and adulation that is bestowed on those players, I wonder if that would be seductive that, you know, they'd be like, huh, I guess it is okay if I'm asked questions like I was a 19-year-old linebacker at Alabama. Like, that's why I think rooting for Montreal, and I'm thinking just big picture about building teams in Canadian markets.
I think it's a great point. We do need a feel-good story, and we haven't had one. Edmonton was sort of that, but they didn't win, but they were sort of that, and nobody wants to go to Edmonton. To your point, the Connor Hellebuck is saying pretty openly, hey, no one wants to come to Winnipeg. He's almost treating it like a miracle that he, as a really good player and maybe the league's best goalie, wants to stay. This is hardly news. We all know that people don't want to play in Winnipeg, but we always assume Toronto was different than Winnipeg. And it is, but, you know, maybe with an asterisk.
It's starting to move away a little bit. And by the way, let's give some love to America. The Buffalo Sabres crowd, it was a Buffalo-Boston game. They started singing the national anthem yesterday when the woman who was singing, her mic cut out, and everyone knew all the words, and maybe are a bunch of expats, but it wasn't like the Sabres were taking on the Senators. It was the Sabres and the Bruins. So just a little gold star for you, Buffalo Sabre fans.
I know, I'm not going to lie. I probably watched that back 3 or 4 times, but you know, it was great. You know, I thought maybe I can forgive them. Now, in fairness, there are a lot of people who live up and down the QEW who follow the Buffalo Sabres.
Of course. So
probably a lot of Canadians in that audience. Yeah. They're always part of the Sabres. But I'd actually like to put together a top five in honor of that, if you're ready. Yeah, top five favorite things about Buffalo, because I actually like them.
All right.
Number one, the Buffalo Bisons. It's our AAA baseball team. You can go and watch them play for $10. See the Jays of tomorrow. Buffalo Television. This goes back to Channel 7. If you go up in Toronto, you know what I mean. Channel 7 gave us Commander Tom and Irv Weinstein. And then there was WUTV, which eventually got folded into the Fox network, but it was an independent station back then. Saturday afternoons, Abbott and Costello movies, Charlie Chan movies, and after school, Mighty Mouse cartoons. Love WUTV. Number three, love the Sabres dance song. Come on, we're bringing culture to Canadians, like Americans always do. Number two is Josh Allen, who might be the most likable star in the NFL. Actually, I've been thinking a lot about this, you know. He and Matt Stafford seem like the most decent, reasonable, slash excellent quarterbacks there are. Most of these guys turn out to be enormous pricks or total dolts, but both of them are smart and likable. What I like about Josh Allen is, you know, he played school in Wyoming, but if he's MAGA, he keeps it to himself. And then finally, number one, food. Buffalo's so good for food. And of course, there's the Anchor Bar and the chicken wings, but I want to throw out something called Beef on Weck, which is a beef sandwich. And Weck is kind of like short for a German word for this Kaiser bun type thing, with salt and caraway seeds, served au jus. Americans do meat sandwiches so much better than Canadians do because they don't F around with how much meat goes into it. I'll give a shout out to Quebec because they do a good job with corned beef and pastrami. But generally speaking, when Americans say sandwich, what they really mean is entire cow.
Yeah, the war on your intestines. Also, I'll throw in there duty-free, cheap Budweiser, Coors Light, and Kahlua as well. So I'll throw that in.
You know, architecture and the Albright Knox Gallery is all good, but we got art up here. What we don't have is big beef sandwiches.
Yeah. All right, there. Shout out to Buffalo.
I've been kind of dominating this because I got up early and I wrote a whole bunch of notes. So I'm going to turn this over to you, to Matthew. Where do you want to go next?
Yeah, there was German romanticism, Utah mammoth prospects, and the top five things you love about Buffalo. Something tells me you woke up before the alarm went off.
5 a.m. So, 5 a.m., Matt.
Yep. That is 5 a.m. prep. So here to me is the number one thing. Scotty Barnes is outscoring Donovan Mitchell and James Harden. Scotty Barnes has more assists than James Harden, and he'd have more if Toronto didn't miss 26 three-pointers on Sunday. So many wide open shots. But the thing we wanted from these playoffs, could Scotty Barnes be the best player on the court? Now, who knows what happens game five tonight in Cleveland? But through four games, Scotty Barnes has been the best player in this series. And I'm over the moon with it, Bob. And I would say this to the Toronto people, Toronto sports fans, where maybe basketball isn't their favorite sport. And by the way, that's fine. I was watching a lot of the CFL draft. I know I'm in the minority on that. But for every Leaf fan, what's the one thing we want in the playoffs? Would guys sacrifice their body, go hard to the net, go to the dirty areas, get hit, and score? Well, that's what Scotty Barnes has been doing in this series, taking on Evan Mobley and Dean Wade and Jared Allen and going to the basket and bullying his way. Scotty Barnes has played the way we wished Matthews and Marner and Nylander and Tavares would do over and over and over again. So shout out to Scotty Barnes.
I like that very much, Matt. And I also enjoy watching the American basketball writers twist themselves into pretzels to pretend that they always believed this much in Scotty Barnes.
Yeah. Bullshit.
Yeah. You know, he's a challenging player in a lot of ways and he's hard to peg, but Ryan Rosello calling him Little Giannis on a video I saw this morning. You know, it's like music critics where they've always liked this band. Right back to their first record, they've always liked this band. You know who I'll give credit to? Kevin O'Connor. Kevin O'Connor from day one said, this guy's amazing. You know who I won't give credit to? Bill Simmons. Bill Simmons can't piss on Scotty Barnes enough, so fuck that guy.
Yeah, I love Bill Simmons, but my Raptors fandom always rears up because whenever they're talking about Scotty Barnes.
You know, I want to see Scotty on Harden where possible. I think it makes a big difference because when he's disrupting the offense, like Cleveland's offense, at the point of attack, you can see that they really struggle with that. And Scotty is so smart and so intuitive that even a guy as, you know, basketball brilliant as James Harden, like that's a fair intellectual chess match between the two of them. And because Scotty has the physical assets then, the wingspan, the strength, the length, I feel like the more Harden doesn't get this team going, the less that team's going to get going. And I want to put my best guy on it. You know what? Let Evan Mobley beat you. You know what, Evan, you got a 35-point game in you. Great. Let's see it.
Yeah, it's head of the snake versus head of the snake. Because that's what Scotty Barnes is for Toronto. That's what Harden is for Cleveland. And here's one thing we know. Cleveland's going to shoot better. You know, they shot well over 50% in game one and game two. And then, you know, the two games in Toronto. So, yes, if you want to disrupt the offense, start at the head of the snake. And it is James Harden. And by the way, we're on the same algorithms, Bob. I saw that Ryan Rosillo quote about Scotty Barnes being Giannis. I saw that at around 6:55 this morning.
As you were doing your research?
As I was prepping for this and prepping for my show.
The whole description of this series as ugly and a rock fight and neither team can shoot. And, you know, the Raptors now, it's become a famous stat. I think it's been since the 1970s, since a team shot that low from the field in the playoffs and won a game. But These are the same people who go out and say, oh, basketball's too soft now, and there's too many easy three-pointers. And what about the good old days when it was a 93-89 kind of defensive slugfest? Well, that's what we got. And when you give it to them, they go, but where'd my scoring go? I love what I'm seeing. This team is offensively challenged.
Yep.
But they, to speak of rock fights, they're holding a rock in each hand, and they're daring anyone to come near them.
They scored 43 points in the fourth quarter of game three. They had 38 at the half on Sunday. I love defense. My only issue I had, the only thing that bothers me is, and especially Scotty Barnes created this, when you get the wide open three, hit the fucking wide open three. Like Jacoby Walter, I know you're a second year guy, but all those missed shots, RJ Barrett, so many, like, that is the only thing that's annoying. It's one thing, okay, you miss a contested three. That can be hard. All the wide open misses. Oh, that was infuriating.
It is. It's a bit like watching NCAA basketball or junior hockey where guys do things at a level that you're just not used to seeing anymore because the pros are like so automatic about everything.
Yeah.
I've been loving it. And, you know, I kind of, you gave your shout out to Scotty Barnes. I feel like I want to give a shout out to Darko Rakovic, not just for the scream he let out after they win game four, which was really fun and inspiring, but you know, like he's a young, like this, he's a first time head coach and this is his first playoffs. I don't think there's a coach in the world that can make Jacoby Walter good from three, but he is taking this team's strengths and maximizing them. He's figured out what Cleveland does well, and he's taking away them getting to the rim and forcing them to win in other ways, and they haven't yet. As much as we want to say this is about defense and effort and Scotty's ascension to where we think he can be, I kind of want to make sure we don't miss Darko in this because, you know, I think he's doing a good job, and he's made some good substitutions along the way.
Yeah, I mean, of course, you know, Jakob Poeltl forces anyone to make substitutions, but no.
Yeah, I'm not counting that as a strategic
masterstroke. Darko, first European-born coach to win an NBA playoff game, and yes, absolutely, he deserves credit for where the Raptors are. Series tied at two, best of three, you know, and what it does is it gives us two more games where things matter. You know, this game matters, and game six matters. And if now, it was,
sorry to interrupt you, but you think it's only going to be two games, or you're saying at least two games?
No, at least two games. Cleveland could go off tonight. Donovan Mitchell and James Harden could combine for 57 points and be great because those guys are combined at the end of this award season. Those guys have combined for 10 all NBA teams. Okay. Those are great players. So they could do it, but the Raptors, that game six means something. If the Raptors had lost game three where Scotty Barnes, 33 and 11 assists, then game four doesn't mean anything. Game five doesn't mean anything because it's the history of the NBA, which has very little spoilers. So, like, I mean, that's the thing you have to be most thrilled about.
Six games in the playoffs is the magic number. That means you don't have to panic. Now, if you get to six games and lose repeatedly, you know, like the Leafs do in six or seven over multiple years, that's different. But most teams, if you can at least get to six games, it doesn't feel like you choked. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right now, Carolina beats the Ottawa Senators 4-0. Ottawa has to look itself in the mirror. If that series goes to six, Ottawa doesn't have to look itself in the mirror. They just got beaten by a better team. But if you are a professional club and you make the playoffs and you get swept, you have to look in the mirror. And after two games against Cleveland, it looked like the Raptors were facing sweep or possible gentleman sweep with five games. But now that it's going to six, whatever happens now between now and the end, you can only have so bad a taste in your mouth about it.
Yeah. Yeah. They won with offense in game three. They won with defense in game four. And their best player, Scotty Barnes, you know, it's been the best player of both teams. And the neat thing is the second best player for the Raptors has been the rookie. So a lot of things we wanted to see, we have seen so far. And the biggest disappointment has been Brandon Ingram, who was great in the regular season.
This is a totally fair assessment. And, you know, to go back to the beginning of the episode where I was doing transactional and you're doing emotional relationships, so I'm going to bring your take of emotions here. When you watch your best player try his ass off, it is so much easier to be a fan. And when you see your best player kind of let it, like kind of chunk it, it is so hard to be a fan of that team. And that's an unfair amount of pressure to put on the best player. But when Austin Matthews doesn't play well, it's like the whole Leafs organization suffers the effects. And not just on the ice, but even just how you look at them. Because you want to believe the team has as much passion for this as you do. And you get that from Scotty Barnes. Like all the press in Canada and abroad talking about how he's just a fucking dynamo out there. Well, it's really easy to get behind a team when your best player is an effing dynamo. Then, oh, he's extremely talented, and maybe one day he'll put it together in an important, you know, all or nothing kind of situation.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just, and also, like, it's like, okay, the starting point guard is out. Oh, don't worry. Scotty will take on that responsibility as well. Now, they've asked him.
Evan Mobley is like a 7-foot destroyer around the rim. Oh, it's okay. If he gets out of hand, you know, we'll put Scotty on him.
Yeah.
Scotty's become like white vinegar in the kitchen. Mm. It just, whatever problem you have, just put some white vinegar on it.
It's true. No matter what the stain is, or it's white vinegar. Oh, it's time to give the floors a clean. Well, three things of hot water and put in some white vinegar. It's true.
Maybe that's another thing I'd ask God is, man, white vinegar. How'd you come up with that?
On the other end.
Beasting. White vinegar.
Yeah. On the other end, what is it about curry or certain oils? Oh, you got an oil stain on your shirt. Might as well throw it in the garbage. It's like, nothing can clean this. Are you serious? You know, that makes no sense to me.
You know, I feel like maybe we haven't put enough research into what we'd ask God, and maybe too much into the Utah Mammoth.
Maybe God has thoughts on the Utah Mammoth. We don't know.
Well, you know, I'm sure they think so.
I'm sure that, you know what? In that little neck of the woods, I would imagine that they do.
That's true. So the big games tonight, do you have the Cavs are an 8.5-point favorite is what I'm seeing, which seems a little robust, but conceivable, but I think it's a little high. I'd put it maybe more around 5.
The markets know what they're doing. And actually, to me, the more interesting one is the Pistons are a 9.5-point favorite against Orlando. But I mean, we have 5 minutes left. We won't do Pistons Orlando. My expectations, it's funny. This game, this is sort of a leaf in the river game. You know, as long as the Raptors try hard, I could see this being a game where Harden and Mitchell are hitting their contested shots. As long as they're contested, you know, that's the most important thing you want to see. It's just that the Raptors are out there and they're just, all you want is scare the hell out of Cleveland, because there is so much pressure on the Cavs. If they lose this series, who, like, getting to your transactional points from earlier, Bob, who knows who stays and who goes at the end of this year?
Tonight is like a Patrick Corbin start for the Jays for me with the Raptors. If we win, that's amazing. If we don't, I get it.
Yeah.
Whereas game 6 is like the Trey Savage start, where it's like, I really need this to be good for so many reasons. So I'm not even going to open up a bag of chips tonight. I was kidding. But I'm not going to open up my best bag of chips. Like, and I'm certainly not making nachos.
Yeah. Oh, no. Now, the nachos are for the game 7, where, you know, you make your own ground beef and all, and you melt the real cheese on it.
By the way, nachos is brilliant.
What's that?
Ground beef on nachos is such a, it's funny because chicken, I don't think works. Pork certainly doesn't work. But ground beef, and not even beef slices, it has to be ground. I love how people figure things out. God, how'd you do that?
He's like, wait, you're asking me that? I have so much more to tell you about the Utah Mammoth.
And why does Monterey Jack melt so good, God?
Then we get into a whole bunch of dairy questions. And he's like, there's a line. There's a line behind you. We gotta keep this moving.
All right, so you've done toaster, You've done T.J. Ginla.
Yeah. You've done Monterey Jack. By the way,
in my defense, I did bring up the Middle East.
That is true. There was that as well. We'll get there. And he's like, I got a really clever answer. One he hadn't thought of before. We have 3 minutes left. So just quick shout out to Trey Savage. Mission accomplished. He didn't have to strike out a ton of people. He did the job, controlled Boston. George Springer could return tonight. And the Jays have the same record this year as they did last year at this time. At the very least, the weather might still be gray and rainy, but at least there's some slivers of sun coming for the Blue Jays.
I saw online that Kaz Okamoto does a gratitude circle with the guys before the game, which is something he brought over from his Japanese team. I thought we could end the show with just a little bit of a Blue Jays gratitude circle between you and I. Louis Varland in the closer spot. I'm grateful for that decision to move Hoffman out and Varland in.
And Hoffman, I am grateful for you. That was a clean inning you did, then giving the ball to Tyler Rogers. The Jays bullpen was incredibly effective last night. A clean bill of health for them.
I'm grateful for Jesus Sanchez, who's a nice surprise, and for Miles Straw, because he fulfills the baseball archetype of lovable, small, undersized guy who, from a utility position, who comes in and makes at least five games a year extra fun.
Yeah, the David Freese. He's the David Freese of the Blue Jays.
I'm grateful that even though Vladdy's not hitting for power, he's up around 340. It's hard to... I want to make sure we're grateful for that, because 340 ain't cheese.
Oh, no. No, absolutely not. Vladdy has been doing, and Vladdy's year this year is kind of like what he was last year. And consider what he did in the playoffs, nothing but gratitude to Vlad.
Any more Jays gratitude?
No, I think that's good. Eric Lauer's on the mound today. Hard to be filled with too much gratitude there.
I'm grateful he'll only be out there for three innings. How about that?
And Bob, finally, I'm grateful that I won't see you stand up again and see those tattered pajama pants. Goodbye, Bob.
I wear my heart on my pants, Matt.
Thanks for listening to the Macko and Cause podcast. Remember to subscribe on iTunes or Audioboom. And if you like the podcast, leave a review. If you don't like the podcast, then maybe don't leave a review.